You are listening to 15 Minutes, the show with Osiris Munir, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hey, all my kindreds out there, what a week. What times we are living in. Before I go on, let me give a shout out to our sponsor, Kevin Pike, Coldwell Banker. He is the Senior Real Estate and Probate Specialist of Coldwell Banker, 818-571-1508. He can handle just about any kind of real estate issue you may have, including coming to the property and staying there if need be. He's wonderful. Again, Kevin Pike, Coldwell Banker, 818-571-1508. Look at that little face. Today, boy, do I have a surprise. But first of all, shout out to all of those people out there who were born with any kind of disability, be it mental, physical, or otherwise. You're the kind of people that live on Earth as super beings and possibly go without notice. I am giving you full-blown, in effect, authentic notice right now that you're the shit. I know, and I know it may be tough for people walking out there, but as long as you walk in your truth, you should be fine. I know that's a loose word now, walking in your truth. But, you know, people that have disabilities or if there are other obstacles, adversities that we may face, those are truths. So they are definitely walking in their truths at all time. And I want you to know you're safe. You are safe. We love you just the way you are. And before I go on, condolences to the families of actor Malcolm Jamal Warner, musician and poet. Malcolm Jamal Warner, I met out at USC many years ago. He was doing a poetry reading with one of the professors there, who I can't recall their name, but definitely his. And he stood up for me. I was one of the few women of color. None actually were out there. Nobody of color out there. I was the only one. And he wanted to make sure that people knew that I was there to do my job. So he said to his mother, you know, she's doing her job. Let's all let her do her job, because we weren't allowed to get close enough to get the kind of camera work. But I had a Zoom lens, so I made it work anyway. But shout out to his family. Many, many condolences. Great young man. Great. And of course, musician Ozzy Osbourne. Wow, man, you really hung in there. You made it longer than I thought you, than a lot of people thought you would. So condolences to Sharon. I know you've been through it. I can't even say enough. But on to our guest today. Speaking of these wonderful beings that I'm speaking of, that I said that they are superhuman beings, I had to send out a posse to find this young lady. I mean, I didn't know what happened. I had to call the Pope. I had to call all over the world to find out where I could find this young lady to get her on my show and to pin her down and let her talk about her life, her wondrous, marvelous life, her courage, her strength, her omnipotent intuition to keep going when all else failed, to stand tall amongst others who stood taller than her. She's little bitty thing with so much power. Her facts of life are real, and her jewels and gems are all her own. Author, actor, social activist, humanitarian, and a woman who holds many, many, many hearts. Jerry Jewel, you!
Thank you.
Hey, you. I had to send out a whole bunch of people to find you. You are wanted everywhere. You are wanted. Thank you for coming on to the show. How have you been?
I've been good. It's, you know, it's like you said, it's been a really weird time right now. And, but I'm hanging in there. You know, I lost my older brother, my oldest brother last week. So sorry,
Jerry.
Thank you.
I'm sorry. I know how that feels. I lost my sister last year, and we're down to like two people in the family. You know, as you mature, people start going. you know?
I know. I know. Yeah,
I'm talking about the immediate family. But let's get into your story, my dearest heart. Now, I know, as you talk about quite frequently, Norman Lear did the foreword of your book, Jerry.
Yes.
Jules and Jim. And I wanted to know why you're called it Jerry's Jules and Jim's.
Well, the publisher, who is a dear friend of mine, Randall Bell, wanted to call it Jerry's Jewels. And I said, no, that sounds like a book on sex. And he said, that's the point. It'll sell more copies.
Oh, and he's right.
And I said, no. So my compromise was Jerry's Jewels and Gems, which I thought was appropriate considering on Deadwood, I had the role of Jewel, another Jewel, and I worked in the gym saloon.
But what did they purposely call you Jewel because your name was Jerry Jewel, so they played on your name?
Of course they did. There's no escape. I mean, I was Cousin Jerry on Facts of Life, and then I was Jewel on Deadwood. As soon as I let casting directors know what my middle name is, I might work again.
You know what? I gotta love you. I'm telling you, I look the mess out of you, girl. You have taken things that might have worked against you and simply transformed and transmuted this stuff into something workable and doable. And so I could see when I heard about your story with Norman Lear, I could see his affection in the image that I saw. I could feel his affection towards you. I could feel the affection you two had for each other. And I want to know, sometimes when we meet people a short time, you know them for 5 minutes, they're a fan. You know them for 20 minutes, they're behind the stage serving you or doing backstage. But Norman Lear stuck. What do you think was the reason that he really felt you as a person, looking beyond whatever your physical thing says, but feeling you, who you are inside?
I think Norman was an old soul like myself. And I think we knew each other way, 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 way back, many, many lives before.
In a past life.
Yeah. And we both were very spiritual. I still am a very spiritual individual. And he was like a second dad to me. I mean, he used to call me all the time, FaceTime me. I mean, how many people get FaceTimed by Norman Lear?
Norman Lear. Exactly.
You know, he just treated me like, you know what was beautiful about Norman Lear and me? There was no pretense. His love was real, it was genuine, and that's hard to find in Hollywood.
Mm-hmm. I love that you two, and it's interesting how people find each other, how we find each other amongst the millions of people on the earth. You two found you know what I mean?
Well, he first saw me perform in 1980 at the second annual Media Access Awards.
Mm-hmm.
And he came on stage afterwards to introduce himself after my show. And he said, my name is Norman Lear. And I said, well, nice to meet you. And he said, you know, you're really funny, kid, but you're way before your time. I said, so? Wait a couple months. And he was so amused by that comeback that it was actually 2 months later he cast me on Facts of Life as Blair's cousin.
I love that. And you know what? The interesting thing, an audience out there and our wonderful fans and our people that we love out there everywhere all over the world, the reason that Jerry's screen is smaller than mine is so she can read my lips and so she can respond in a way that we can understand each other. So just so you know, okay. And if it wasn't, we don't care what you think out there. We got her on the show. We're happy to have her. But anyway, I wanted to talk to you about, now, do you remember the movie Forrest Gump?
Oh, God, yeah.
Okay, so remember how Forrest Gump's mother never, ever made him feel that he was different from everyone else. And because she didn't bring him up to feel different, he would just have all of these big, beautiful benefits and great fortune fall upon him because he was such an authentic and genuine person. And I wanted to ask you, did your parents and your family make you feel safe by telling you that you were just like everybody else instead of trying to make you feel like, oh, I'm stifled because this is whatever this is and that's whatever that is?
Yeah, I had an incredible supportive foundation with my brothers and my parents, and I had chores to do like everybody else. I remember when I was about 13, I thought for sure that Mom would never ask me to do the dishes because I had cerebral palsy and I'll break them. So I thought, oh, I'll get out of that. And then she asked me to do the dishes. And I thought, oh, my God, I can't believe it. And I think I intentionally broke a couple of dishes thinking she might change her mind.
You broke them.
Well, for my birthday that year, I got this huge, big box. And, you know, my parents, my whole family knew how much I loved television. So I thought it was a little TV for my bedroom. I thought, oh, because it was heavy. It was just like a TV box. And I opened it up, and it was a whole box of Corningware that you can't break.
So what did you do? How did they react when you would do things like that?
Like what?
Like throw plates on the floor or open up a box of cereal.
Oh, I got punished. You know, don't give me that, Jerry.
Did they feel any empathy for you because of your condition, or no, they didn't care?
Oh, no. I remember when I was cleaning up my room and I had to be inspected by Mom before I could go out and play. And she came in and opened all my doors. And she said, you call this folding clothes? I do it. She dumped the whole drawer on the floor and made me fold them like my sister folded hers. I don't care how long it takes you. You're going to fold your clothes. You're not going to roll them balls and stuff them in the drawer. By the way, now what? I roll up all my clothes in balls and stuff them in the drawer.
See? She was right. Your mother's pretty smart.
No.
But remember, what I like about you is that you laugh. You make everybody laugh because I love the way you think about things, much like I do. You have to laugh at some of this stuff because it's so strange. You never remember Forrest Gump? He was always so happy when he told his story, when he saw Lieutenant Dan, and he said, hi, Lieutenant Dan. He never, ever paid attention that anything was wrong with Lieutenant Dan Dan. He just treated him as if he would treat anybody else. And I think
that was the whole moral of the story. But it's funny that you should mention Forrest Gump, because when I saw that film initially, I came out of the theater and I was very bummed. And my husband at the time said, "Why are you so bummed out?" And I said, "Well, because there was no mention of what Forrest is doing with his life now." And Richard looked at me and he said, "Jerry, Forrest is fictional. He's not real." And I said, "Oh, thank God," because I was feeling guilty because he did more with his life than I have with my.
Wait a minute. But Tom Hanks, it was such a fine actor. It was as if it was a real person. So yes.
Did you just find that out through me?
Wait a minute. Don't feel bad. There's no reason that I should be weird or whatever, but I was a strange little kid too. So our parents, they never talked to us about race and things like that. So when I saw Facts of Life, I just thought you were somebody on the show. I never thought about something wrong. You know, I just like, oh wow, that's an interesting character to have.
It's beautiful that you and I were raised that way. Think about it. If the world were raised out the way we were, this world would be a hell of a kinder, more wonderful place. I believe that.
It would be. And I am not lying when I tell you, my parents never brought up things like that. My dad, at the time, Ricky Nelson, I think the Nelsons or somebody, were on TV, and my dad would be like, "Get from in front of that TV, kissing that," because we kissed the lips on the TV. Remember, you're a little kid. And we go to the TV, like the guy was going to feel your lips over the screen. It was so funny. So I think your parents were amazing. So where did you learn your acting and how to do your work and your skills? Where did that come from?
Well, I was in my third year of college. I was very frustrated because I was flunking anatomy and physiology. I was flunking algebra.
Wow.
But you have to understand, state rehab was paying for my education. I had nothing to fall back on. I had to graduate. I didn't come from parents with money. You know, who was going to employ me? I couldn't get a job at Taco Bell. You get your taco in 10 different pieces. But I went to school with Alex Valdez, who was blind, and he was a stand-up comic, and he got me into stand-up at the Comedy Store. That was the first place I ever performed in 1978. And I dropped out of school at the risk of, you know, my attitude was, I'm only going to be young once. And if I fail at comedy, I'll go back to school and let rehab know that I'll continue my education.
There you go.
And I believe it was in the cards. I was supposed to be in this industry. And I was inspired by Carol Burnett. We had a pen pal relationship from the time I was 12.
Really?
She always told me never to quit. Getting to acting in every capacity. She said there was no guarantees that you're going to become professional, but you never know what you can do, Jerry, unless you try.
That's right.
That coming from Carol Burnett was very, right. very powerful. I showed that to my rehab counselor. See?
What did they say?
Oh, they thought I was nuts.
I know. You know, but you gotta the what I love is that even talking to you, I just see you. I hate that people even have to bring up anything about whatever it's supposed to be. Because when I was a kid, I was made fun of all the time for different reasons, you know. And so because of that, and like I said, my parents never put our mind, we were more like, my dad would make us go to the dictionary for everything. You have to read everything. You have to clean your hands. You have to.
Same thing. Oh my God. If I played Scrabble with my parents and put a word down, they would ask, do you know what that word means? Well, no.
No.
But it's a real word. You can't play it unless you know what it means. So look it up and then hand me the dictionary. Learn what the word is and then you can play it and we'll give you the points.
Wow. My dad was like, he was weird. He would make us do things like, do I look like Webster to you? Do I look like Mr. Webster?
That line. What? Yep.
Who is Mr. Webster? He would put a name on it for a minute. So anyway, Jerry, when you were in school, although, you know, school can present challenges to almost anybody, depending on what you think about school, depending on your mindset, what, you know, what your learning abilities or whatever are. But when you were in school, were you focused more on the creative part of your classes or the actual, because you're pretty bright. I mean, anybody can tell you're smart as hell just to be able to pull off and do what you've done. You know, being on Sesame Street and Two of a Kind and, you know, then Facts of Life and then HBO Deadwood and being nominated for an Emmy and all the things you've done. At what point did you decide that you were going to totally go into entertainment and that was your calling?
Well, I think when I was about 13, we had a new teacher. Now, you have to remember, I am a survivor of special ed. Mm-hmm. If you got put into the special ed system, you couldn't get out. I didn't get out completely until college. I was even integrated in high school, only part-time regular classes. Mm. But I remember the teacher having a meeting with all the parents upon my last year in special ed. Mm-hmm. And she said, I am just appalled that these bright children are not at their level academically. And I can't prepare them for high school in 1 year. But what I can give them is the gift to know who they are and what their true abilities are within. And she asked each of us what we wanted to be when we grew up. Mm-hmm. And of course, I want to be a writer. I want to be a comedian like Carol Burnett. She made me write 3 plays that year and put one on. That was my assignment for the year before I graduated from special ed.
Oh, isn't that
amazing?
No, I said, oh, wow, that sounds interesting. Yeah. So when you were, what I wanted to find out, when you did your act at the Comedy Store, do you ever see yourself going back into stand-up? Oh, and by the way, I thought I would die when I heard the name of your book. You said, I'm walking as straight as I can. That is just, who came up with the title of that?
That was a play on words. Remember the movie, I'm Dancing as Fast as I Can?
Yeah. Oh, you said I'm still walking.
Yeah. Well, I could never dance really well, so I changed it to I'm walking as straight as I can.
That is very, very, that's a very, very cool title. I love what you come up with. I'm telling you, I love where your head is. So when you're organizing yourself and you're preparing to work, either going on set or either doing a show like this, interviewing, which you've done a lot of shows. I watched a lot of your interviews. You are bad. You know what you're doing. I mean, you're a great guest to interview. Very interactive and, you know, very interesting to talk to. But when you do your work, are you doing everything yourself? Do you have an assistant to write things out for you? Or you just come and spitting it out and then have somebody organize it and put it together?
I do everything myself, and I have never written one comedic line in my whole career.
What?
Never. I go up on stage and I do it.
It's all that authentic that you can just go in there and roll it off. Just start talking.
I've always done it that way. Always.
Oh my gosh, Jerry, you're even brighter than I thought you were. Jeez, I knew you were very bright. But I'm like, you're even brighter than I thought you were. The bright I thought you were.
I'm very lazy.
So do you think about it before you speak it? Is it something you've thought about? Like when you, like me, if I go on, I'm like, okay, I'm going to say this, or my mind may go like this, depending on who the audience is or the guest. Do you go through that kind of process before working?
Not really. No preparing whatsoever. I mean, what you're getting from me is right now is just me. I didn't think about what I'm going to talk about. I just respond to the energy that's out there.
Mm-hmm.
Your energy I'm responding to.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The only routine I really ever wrote was my very first one that I did in 1978. Because I was too young to know that I didn't have to write it. No.
You can just go out there and say it. Do you ever bring anyone on the set with you to play off of, or you just do all of that by yourself as well?
Well, it depends on what are you talking about. Are you talking about stand-up? Are you talking about acting? What are you talking
when you
about?
When you do acting and stand-up, do they provide, like when you act, do they have someone like, oh yeah, they'll be good with Jerry, so let's, you know, get them in the scene? Or when you do your stand up, oh yeah, they would be good to play off of, you know, just for comedy, for routine.
Stand up is always isolated. I've never depended on another person to help me with that. And as an actress, like any other actor, you know, you have other actors that you work with. But I have no control over that. I have to learn my lines. I mean, if I didn't know my lines, I'd be in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
For acting, I'm talking about. That's a different skill than stand-up.
Yeah, I know. It's two different worlds. Yeah. But today they seem to be combining a lot of things. You know, like somebody will do, and then they'll show a clip of the same, putting them in interactive. I thought maybe, you know, that you had at some point, as you established yourself, you would bring other people up, you know, to come up and say something. Much like when they used to do the roast. Remember, Jerry, they did all the roast, and somebody would introduce somebody. They just start cracking up and messing with them, and then the person would actually come on and be involved in the set, you know.
I don't think I've ever experienced that, truthfully.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm sorry, what did you say? I didn't hear the last part.
I don't think I've ever experienced that,
truthfully. That part of it. Okay. That's fair enough. That's fair enough. So let's go back to your... I know you do a great deal of public speaking. I know you're an advocate in a lot of ways, a humanitarian, an author, a writer. Jeez, child, you're busy. And very, very brilliant. What are you doing currently? I know Deadwood was on HBO. What are you doing currently with all of the things you're doing? And I know you have your book coming out in August. It's coming out in August, right? Jerry's Jules and Jim.
It's already out.
It's already out? Oh, okay.
Ready?
There it is. Hold it up. Can we see? Can we get it closer? I love the cover. Oh, I see it. I got it. Because it looks like you were upside down.
It's been out for about a year.
It has?
Yeah.
I thought you were doing something in August with your book. Maybe talking about your book or something. It doesn't matter. I don't mind being wrong. I don't mind being incorrect.
Are you hearing impaired too?
I could be hearing impaired. I don't know. But I know I was reading about your book, and because it was so prevalent on the page that I got about information about you, I thought it was something more. Yeah, because people are still talking about your book, whether it's been out a year, 2 years, it's going to be out 3 months or 4 months. It's still being talked about. And so I thought it was much more newer because it's still being so talked about and spoken of.
Now, I even had a big book signing at Barnes & Noble.
Yeah.
5 months ago at the Grove.
Oh, that's what it was. It was the Grove's book signing.
That's what it was.
Okay. So I'm not real crazy. Not real there yet. I'm getting there, but not quite on the other side. Anyway, so I said not quite on the other side yet. So when you do your acting, when you were on Facts of Life, what was the most fun part about being on Facts of Life? Because that was a great show. I liked Edward, but because you got to do a lot of the comedy and stuff on Facts of Life, what was the most fun part for you on that show?
Well, I would say I was closest to Lisa Welchel, who played Blair. Uh-huh. And we were even roommates. We were roommates for about a year when I was on the show.
Oh, wow. How did
Yeah, I was living in Hermosa Beach at the time, and I was driving a 69 Biscayne Chevy.
Uh-oh.
Uh-oh. She was worried about me driving that far, and she asked me to spend the night at her apartment one night, and she said, "Why don't you stay, and we can be roommates?" Then you don't have to drive all that distance in your 69 Chevy.
Uh-huh. And how did you must have gotten along well? You say that you stayed there for a while.
Yeah, I lasted, I think, 4 seasons. Yeah.
You were in a lot of the episodes. So what was the funniest? When you came onto the set every day, what was the most fun thing you got to do? Besides act stupid and hang out with everybody, you guys make fun and laugh and act.
You know, truthfully, what Facts of Life did for me was kids were always afraid of me. Children were always afraid of me or mimicking me or, you know, making fun of me. They didn't understand cerebral palsy, my movements. And all of a sudden, I'm known to millions of kids all over the place. And they were running up to me, asking me for my autograph. Oh, my God, you're Blair's cousin. And it was so heartwarming that role erased so much of the fear the children had of me. Did that make sense?
I didn't even think of that. But you know what? I can imagine that because children are frightened of a lot of different things,
yeah.
You know, and a lot of things, especially if it's not immediately in their world, you know.
I mean, I remember when I was about 12, maybe 11, I was selling cookies for a project for my school. And this adult entered the door with cerebral palsy. She must have been in her late 30s, early 40s. And I was so frightened. And I have cerebral palsy.
But maybe you had never seen it on somebody else, right? Is that what
No. My question was, when I came home, I said to my mom, I said, you know, this lady that lives on the other side of town bought my cookies. But she's an older adult person with cerebral palsy. does this mean I have to have this my whole life?
What did your mom say?
Well, that she was surprised that I believed on some level that I was going to grow out of it.
I love that. I love her for that.
You know, I couldn't perceive me having it as a grown woman. So it was a whole level, another level of acceptance. Now, I'm going to be real honest with you. You know, people said that I had such courage to do stand-up. You know, wow, what a courageous thing to do. I look at it as the theory of the bumblebee.
Mm-hmm.
Because the bumblebee technically cannot fly. Its body weight is too heavy for its two little wings. But you see, the bumblebee doesn't know that. So it goes ahead and flies anyway.
But see, that goes back to Forrest Gump, what his mother taught him. Because his mother taught him that there was nothing wrong with him. So he saw the world in a way that was a clear mirror, because he didn't see that there was anything wrong. So he never developed the kind of prejudices, the kinds of misconceptions and things about things, except when he fell in love with Jenny and he felt that he was different. But even then, he was very bright. He was bright enough to create all of those things that he did, just as you are. Look at you, what you've done. So what is my excuse and everybody else's? That's what I want to know. What is everybody else's excuse?
Well, I think to add on to a little bit more of that bumblebee theory, if I had been fully aware of what my obstacles really were, I don't know that I would have continued. I was oblivious. In fact, a very early article on me in the LA Times, I had only been a comedian for about maybe 6 or 7 months, and they did this huge article on me saying I was refreshing and funny, what courage she had, da 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 da. And it's amazing how much self-confidence this young girl has, because she totally ignores her hecklers as if they're not even there. And truthfully, when I read the article, I laughed because I didn't know I had any hecklers, because I'm hearing them there.
Wait a minute. I swear, I am Kinzoku. That means I'm a kindred with you on that, because for many, many years, I never thought about myself as being a color, because when you live inside of yourself and you're really living inside, you're not thinking necessarily about how other people look at you. It took me many years to figure out that people didn't like me because it's like, I'm like, are you serious? I was in shock. Like, what? You know, that kind of thing. Because again, we were not raised to look at things like that. Our parents just never really brought it up. They really didn't. They didn't bring things like that up. We were more taught about, like I said, reading and education and things. They didn't talk about really racism, things like that, and people with disabilities. Because in our own family, just as I'm sure maybe some aspect of your family or friends, there may be others similar that have different things. And so we were taught to just, that was Cousin Jerry or Cousin Susie or Cousin Uncle Johnny.
Well, like I mentioned at the beginning of the show, I said that my oldest brother, David, passed last week. And David was 10 years older than me. And I remember when I got my first bike and Dad lectured David, said, don't you dare take those training wheels off your sister's bike. As soon as my dad rolled out of the driveway, he took the training wheels off the bike. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I, no, forget it. You're going to ride like a big kid. Had David not done that, would I have learned how to ride a bike? In fact, I was living in Fullerton at the time. My parents never knew this. But I rode my bike to Garden Grove, to Anaheim.
Yeah, you were really biking.
I was riding all over the place.
Yes.
I was like, that was my freedom. That was my freedom because I could ride a bike better than I could walk.
Yeah, that was your freedom out. And you said better than you can walk. Well, you know, you didn't have, all you had to do was sit still and pedal and pretty much guide everything with your mind. And you're very bright. Yeah.
But
listen, I wanted to ask you another question before we announce the sponsor again and then get off air. I wanted to ask you, when you were talking about how other people view people like yourself or like people that have any kind of obstacle or adversity or whatever, who knows? It could be mental, could be physical, who knows? A lot of people carry a lot of things and never talk about them. And some people are open and honest like yourself. At any time, don't you feel that when you're engaging with your audience, whether you're acting, doing stand-up, speaking at an event or whatever, that you transcend your physical presence and you just become Jerry Jewell, a person inside of a human body?
Yeah, I definitely do that. You know, I did a show once, a stand-up up in Oregon, many, many years ago, maybe 30 years ago. And I left it open for question and answer at the end of the show. And somebody asked me, Jerry, how do you get up when you get down? and I remember thinking, God, what an odd question, but okay. And I sat on the stage and I laid down. This is how I do it. And I put this one leg. The audience was hysterical.
They were laughing so hard.
They were laughing. I honestly didn't know she meant emotionally. I thought, what an honor. Okay, well, I'll show you how I get up. Get back.
But see, that's what I'm saying. I think I was impaired and I didn't know some kind of way because people would say things to me and I would be like, what? It's like I didn't really get it until, and then, you know, but I was very, very bright at the same time. You know what I mean? It's like, okay, I don't know exactly what they're saying because I lived inside of myself, much like you. You stay inside of yourself. You know what I mean when I say that?
Yeah, I know what you mean.
You know what I mean when I say that, but before we go, I want to give another shout out to our sponsor, Kevin Pike, Coel Banker, 818-571-1508. Kevin will take all of your real estate issues and make them resolutions and solutions. Senior real estate and probate specialist, Kevin Pike, Coldwell Banker, 818-571-1508. And now back to my lovely, beautiful, wonderful being, Miss Jerry Jewell. Jerry, what are your social media tags and how do we keep up with you? Not you keep up with us. How do we keep up with you?
My website, jerryjewell.com, and Facebook. I'm just trying to figure out Instagram. I'll get it. And what's the other one? I'm trying.
Facebook,
I'm
not Instagram and Twitter or X now.
No, I refuse to do Twitter or X. So,
Twitter and X. I'm like, wow, they've changed the names. So, jerryjewell.com, jerryjewell.com, you guys out there. And also, please read her books. Read the one that she was talking about, she signed at the Grove. That's the most recent one, but the one I'm walking as straight as I can. I think that's a hell of a title. So it got my interest just from the title alone and the cover on Jerry's Jewels and Gems is just beautiful. Beautiful. Beautiful.
Thank you.
Yeah. So where can we see you? Can we go on your site and you're going to talk to us? Do you have a podcast? I think you should do a podcast.
I'm kind of active on Facebook. You know, I you know, respond to people's remarks, and I look at other people's timelines and I respond. I'm not real big there, but I do many different podcasts like yours. Mm-hmm. So I'm out there. I'm just
you
not
are really out there. You've done a lot of interviews. I watched like 6 or 7 interviews that you did. You did a lot of them. You did the one with the, I can't think of her name. There was a woman you did an interview with. Then you did the two guys. Those guys. And then I watched another interview you did. It was one of the CBS shows. You've done a lot of work, my darling. I'm very, very impressed and so honored to have you on my on our show. And then the other thing I wanted to ask you, Jerry, you, I know you're writing a children's books. I believe you said on one of the interviews it was for your sister who passed away, and she always wanted to do this children's book, and it was about this monkey that got cancer or something. Is that, am I going in the right direction?
Well, yeah, my sister passed of cancer 8 years ago. And she, one of the things she wanted to do was write a book about a monkey. And she named the monkey, it was a doll that I actually bought her at the cancer center. And she loved that monkey. And she named it Buck. And she wanted to write a children's book about how Buck overcame cancer and call it Buck Up to Cancer. And I promised her on her bedside. She was so upset that she wasn't going to be able to finish her book. And I promised her that I would finish the Buck book and that in the story, Gloria would be Buck's guardian angel.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's wonderful. Yeah, you did. Like I said, I've watched a lot. You are very, very busy, my dear. I'm like, wow, she's really out there. You are definitely out there. So don't forget about me, everybody. Please, please support anyone like Jerry Jewell that is a wonder to me. She's an author, writer, actor. She's doing all of these things, so I don't want to hear any of you out there with any excuses, okay? Nothing.
Also, and I am working on a documentary right now called My Next Breath. So
My Next Breath?
Yes.
Okay, so don't forget about her documentary, My Next Breath. Don't forget to read her books. Follow her. She is one of the most interesting people I've ever encountered, and I mean that. You know, I don't know what's supposed to be wrong or how we label things in society, you know, but what I can say is I look straight to someone's heart and I feel what's inside of a person's body. I don't have any other way to do it. That's the way I've been raised, and that's the only way I can see people. The other thing is listen up. Without your support of the radio station, thanks and shout out to Sam Hassan. Thanks, Sam, for always letting us shine on our show and bringing us and letting us have great guests like Miss Goddess Jerry Jewell, who had to run down all over town to find and get her on my show. Thank you so much for LA Talk Radio letting us do our things. And don't forget that I like you and I loke you. I loke you because I love you for who you are, Miss Jerry Jewell, and for what you stand for. And I like you because you continue, all of you out there, including myself, to get up and stand and become who you are, your most authentic self every day of the week, every moment, every hour. Don't you let nobody tell you different. You are bad. Okay, we'll see you next week on LA Talk Radio. Thanks, Jerry, for coming on our show. I want to have you back. We'll talk about your documentary.
Okay, thank you.
Kisses. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
You are listening to 15 Minutes, the show with Osiris Munir, only on LA Talk Radio.